You're listening to Voices of Your Village. And today, Monica Packer and I got to dive into how to create habits when you're drained and overwhelmed. For me, when it comes to habits, it can feel like, okay, I'm going to do this thing, and then I go all in on something, and then it feels really overwhelming, and it doesn't continue. Or I look at it and I'm like, oh, that sounds great, and I'm so spent or beyond my bandwidth that I cannot add another thing in. Even if my current system isn't working, that sometimes even accessing the bandwidth for change feels overwhelming and hard. I love that Monica has broken down specific steps, ways to form habits with little time, low support, limited energy, and how we can form supportive habits without being perfect at them. There was so much room in her approach for fluidity, for it not to always look the same, because we are in different seasons of life at different times. And I love that it makes it feel accessible and achievable and really helps with the like perfection side to feel like, okay, don't have to be perfect at this for it to be helpful or effective. So without further ado, let's dive into how to create habits when you're drained and overwhelmed with Monica Packer. All right, folks, let's dive in. Hey there, I'm Alyssa Blass Campbell. I'm a mom with a master's degree in early childhood education and co-creator of the Collaborative Emotion Processing Method. I'm here to walk alongside you through the messy, vulnerable parts of being humans raising other humans with deep thoughts and actionable tips. Let's dive in together. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Voices of Your Village. Today, I get to hang out with Monica Packer. She's a normal mom, as she describes herself, recovering perfectionist who uncovered the truest model to lasting growth. It's progress made practical. As a podcaster and coach, she guides women to find sustainable growth by adopting progress over perfection. Here for that. Monica is a mom of five, a former middle school teacher, sourdough obsessor, and beginning gardener. You can find more about Monica at aboutprogress.com. Hello, Monica. How are you?
I'm doing great. Those hobbies, I realized, all are thanks to the pandemic.
That's like, oh, so funny.
I'm a classic pandemic mom now.
Hilarious. Yeah, the sourdough. I was like, I wonder if this picked up around 2020.
It most certainly did. And I also homeschooled for a year, but I plan to never do that again. So at least that hobby, I didn't have to continue that one necessarily.
Sure. It's so funny because I feel like I was like the opposite of the trendy pandemic person where I was like, oh, I have no desire to ever like make my own bread or really pick up any of that. I was like, what can I just decrease from my life? Was like my pandemic approach.
You did it the smart way. You did it. Especially, I just brought home 40 bags of compost right before this call. And I think both my husband and I will tell you, you picked the right path.
My like go-to in life when I'm feeling whelmed is like to decrease. I'm like, what can I take off my plate when I feel whelmed? And so for some folks, they want like a distraction or something else to be able to feel in control of. And I, when like everything else feels out of control, which also makes total sense, I'm like, let me just curl up in bed and do nothing. Is my go-to wherever possible. But those two
I love
sound...
both them. I love both paths, but I totally think the more I keep going on my path, I keep coming back to yours. So I think you're doing it right.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I'm excited today to get to chat about habits, especially when we just have a little bit of time, when we don't have a bunch of support, when we have limited energy. One of my like pet peeves is when people are like, wake up at 5 a.m. and do X, Y, and Z and like carve out 20 minutes to just like meditate in the morning. And like,
it's easy.
Oh my gosh. I'm like,
20 minutes.
Can't give up more sleep than I already give up and be a functional parent. Like, I can't do that. That's not a choice for me. And so I'm excited to get to dive into this with you.
Well, I am too. And I'll just start by saying that I did not plan to being a habit person. If people are listening and they're like, habits, boring, or habits, that's not for me, or, oh, I just feel anxious. I mean, all of the above, that was me too. So I'm here to talk to everyone feeling those things.
And I'm curious because I'm one of five kids, and I feel
Oh,
like
yeah.
my mom had and has like incredible routines and practices out of necessity of being a parent of five, right? That like
Yeah.
when you got one kid, we can get by with like more unstructured stuff, with less that's like habit-based and routine-based, because there's just more flexibility. And then as you add in kids, I'm curious how much of that plays into then like your interest in habits of like you've had to create them in order to survive and thrive in parenthood. Because I've noticed now I look at it in my mom, Zach and I were just talking about this of like, it's incredible. Like we'll go to my parents' house and there's like 18 of us
Yeah.
with siblings and spouses and kids and whatever. And my parents just have like these systems down for hosting 18 people consistently. And it is incredible to like watch it all kind of play out now from like a different lens where we're not young kids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, they've always been good at this. Like, this is something they have really gotten down is like routines and habits that worked for them to survive and thrive out of necessity, right? Because they had, as my dad would say, a basketball court full of kids. And so I'm wondering for you personally, like, do you think that that has like played into then this work that you're doing now?
You are making a connection I didn't make before this conversation, but yes, you're so right. A lot of that has come out of necessity. In addition to having those kids, three of my five so far are neurodiverse. My oldest is autistic, among other things. And you're right, out of necessity, just to try to maintain a home that was not in a constant state of dysregulation, we had to have clearer routines. And we keep those to keep us all happy and connected, not because I want everything to be super routine. And I would also say our routines are very simple still. It's not like we have a 20-step every day, like all day, every day series of routines, and each one of 20 steps. It's pretty simple in terms of they know what touch points we have during the day and they keep us all grounded. But what I would say, Alyssa, is like I've always been good at maintaining my responsibilities. So like whatever I needed to do a good job when I was a teacher, when I was a piano teacher, then now, like as a podcaster, like and as a mom, I've been always able to maintain my responsibilities and the habits that help those things stay in place. But what I really suffered in was having good habits and routines for myself. And it's because I was putting the responsibilities ahead of myself because everything was urgent and everything still is urgent. Everything was reactive in nature. Things had to get done. I was the one who was there. I have always been the primary caretaker for my kids, and I've also worked on the side as well. So, because of that, I kind of just kept putting myself on the back burner. And that led to me not being in a great place, not having a self to give from. It led to a lot of dysregulation in my household because it all stemmed back to me. And so, a large part of what my work is helping women get better habits and routines. Not for their families necessarily, although that definitely can come along for the ride, and it does, always does. It's more starting with themselves so they have something to give from.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. One of the like rules in my household growing up was that if my mom was sitting on the couch and her eyes were closed, like unless someone was on fire, like you weren't supposed to disturb her. And like that was just what we
So
knew
smart.
to be true. And that, like, yeah, she just carved out these little pockets where it was like, I'm not available for questions right now. I will be in a little bit. And like we like came to learn those expectations of like when she was available, when she wasn't. And he actually had recently said to somebody, like, I think my mom was like the OG queen of self-care and she didn't even know it. Like she would just say, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go out and work in the garden for the next 15 minutes. You can come out and play in the backyard if you want. You can be a part of the garden. But I think one of the things that was really key with my mom was that she also accepted, like, oh, when I open my eyes from this little cat nap I just took on the couch, or when I pop back in after gardening, the house isn't going to be spotless, right? Like, I just let five kids run amok. Mm-hmm. And with that is going to come the fort that they just built with all these things or whatever. Like, there was a relinquish of control.
Mm-hmm.
That
also
she,
probably by like necessity. Yeah,
totally. Well, sure. But she didn't see it as like, I need to control this space at the expense of myself. For her, it was, I need to nourish myself and relinquish the control of the space all the time. And that's a practice for me. Like, that's something I don't think, like, I want both, right? Like,
yeah, of course.
I want to take care of myself and keep control of the space. And that's something I'm curious to kind of hear as we're talking about habits for ourselves today. I think for some of us, like, habit formation can also feel like kind of like a pass-fail challenge that mm-hmm. I always fail, where I'm like, I'm gonna start this habit, and then like I'm in it and I'm like, I failed, right? And so then I have this narrative about myself when it comes to like starting new things that like, well, I don't follow through with them.
I'm basically standing up and applauding because you just made two huge connections on why we fail habits so much. One is because we are set up to fail, and I'll talk to that. And the second is because we form an identity of someone who was bad at habits. So let's go to the first part, and I'll give you the nutshell version. We can dive into anything deeper that you'd like. The nutshell version here is that a lot of times when we think we're going to start a habit, what we're really starting is a routine. So we are not just looking at one small thing to do. We're looking at a series of habits all stacked together into a routine. We're looking at a whole time of day. Sometimes these pockets can be 20 to, you know, 2 hours long. And when someone says they want to start on that, they're not realizing that what they're starting is a huge thing that's going to require a ton of energy, a ton of time. And you can do it, but it will come at a cost. And that cost is going to come in maybe other routines that you have, or relationships, or your mental or physical health. So that's one big factor right there, is just recognizing what's the gap between what I think is a habit and what actually is a habit. And the second half to this is that we are taught to create a habit. We have an ideal in our mind, and then we start it. And then we do that ideal for 28 days, 21 days. Sometimes people say 30, 100 days. And then at the end of those days, we have a new habit. But what that is setting us up for is failure, because there's no flexibility. You're starting with the ideal, which also requires a lot of energy. Even if you're like, my ideal is a 30-minute walk a day, that seems doable. But if you don't currently walk for 30 minutes a day, that's a lot. That's a lot to do. And so we start out with this wrong idea of what it means to, one, have a habit, and two, to form it. And we are set up for failure, when really what we need to look for is a way to form habits that is built on flexibility. And because of that flexibility, we have the consistency we need to create habits that stick. It's a whole different way of looking at one habits and forming them.
Can you give me an example of a habit? Because I think you're right that like when we talk about habits, often what we really mean are routines. And so what would like a habit look like in comparison to a routine?
Well, and sometimes this language is interchangeable. So I don't want people to have to like sit there and try to parse out, wait, like, where am I starting? It's just more about, if you're looking at a habit, think about how many steps are a part of it and how long it takes. And that's where you can decide, oh no, this is actually more of a routine. It's a series of habits, like a nighttime routine. I wash my face, I brush my teeth, I meditate, I journal, and I go to sleep. It's simple. Well, that's like four or five series of habits right there. So instead, you can think of, well, what's my skincare? Like washing my face. Well, it might have multiple steps, but because it's still in a contained space and time, like maybe 3 to 5 minutes, then that can count as a habit, even though there's technically more steps to it. But that's the funny thing, is most people come to me and they're like, I want to work on my morning routine. And when we parse it out, like I said, it's a whole series of sometimes 20 steps or more. They're like, okay, so let's start back to, which habit do you want to start with the most? And not because you think you should have it, but it's actually something that we do a little bit backwards. I ask them, how do you want to feel in this time of day? And which of those habits will help you feel that way? And then with that habit, we come up with what I call a baseline way to not only begin it, but this baseline also acts as a way to fall back on the days where you have these reactive responsibilities that kick into gear, where you don't have even 5 minutes to do your skincare routine. You have one. You don't have 10 minutes to journal. You have 30 seconds. And because you don't have the ideal, it doesn't mean you can't do the ideal. It means you start with and go back to the baseline way that helps you have the consistency you need to keep doing that habit.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking it. Okay, I feel like I need an example. There's too many terms for me. With the baseline and the habits and the routines. And the, yeah, so I guess
I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, let's rock and roll here. So you can dive in and do this with me if you're down.
I'd love to do that. That'd be fun.
Okay, cool. One thing that I know about myself is that at the end of the day, I often resort to like, so we'll put Seiji down and then we tag team just like cleaning up, doing lunch for the next day, that sort of stuff. And I love this time. I like pop in my AirPods. I listen to a podcast. It's like downtime for me. But then when that ends, I will often find myself just like scrolling for an hour or whatever. And I'm like, ugh. And then I'm like in bed later than I'm on, or I didn't connect with Zach or whatever. And this is a part of the day that I'm like, I wish I had like a more like concrete concrete habits or a more concrete routine that was nourishing for me, that I feel like I end the day in a way that actually isn't nourishing.
One, I'm glad you're starting with the evening, because a lot of times people want to wake up earlier, have a better morning routine, and we end up always starting the night before instead.
I, so for the record, never want to wake up earlier.
Again, I just am standing up and giving you a round of applause here. You are my kind of gal. So listen, let's start with your nighttime routine or some kind of habit that you can blend into this nighttime routine. You already have some great routines there. You're, you know, getting your house in order. You're getting things ready for the next day. But you, it sounded like you want more nourishment.
Possibly, yeah, exactly. So like connection. That first like half hour, maybe it's 20 minutes some nights, you know, whatever, feels good. It's like, okay, we're getting the house ready. We're getting prepared for the next day. And I'm listening to a podcast, which for me is just like, I don't, at the end of the day, like I want a couple minutes where like, I guess 20 to 30 minutes where no one's talking to me, where I can kind of like go in my own zone. So like that feels good. It's when that ends that it's like ends up being like an hour and a half of what then ends up feeling like wasted time.
Okay. And I mean, I could spend a whole episode just on numbing behavior alone, because that is one of the things that a lot of people want to work on, and me too. And I'll just say, let's take the shame out of it, because scrolling the phone isn't what's bad for you. It's the lack of intention. It's totally, it's not intentionally doing it maybe as long as you are, or it's taking you away from other intentions that you have. So let's start with what kind of habits would help you feel nourished yourself that you can think of. What's nourished you in the past?
Sure. Like connecting with Zach at the end of the day. And when I when there are those nights where it's like, oh, like our phones are away and we just like sit and chat and connect, like that feels good for me. Doing mm-hmm. things sometimes, like every once in a while, I'll take a bath. That feels good for me. Stretching at the end, it's like sounds so silly, but like stretching. And I still don't pop it in there, you know? Mm-hmm. Those are three that I feel like are nourishing for me.
Maybe we just start with just chatting then with your husband, and then you can add in stretching, or you can add in a bath, or other sometimes it's even just adding in a pocket of me time where, you know, sometimes we go to our phones because we're still feeling the pressure of responsibilities that are looming over our shoulders, and it's the easiest way to try to escape or avoid them. So we can have that be an ultimate goal, that you have time each night to wind down and it's just about you. But to begin with, your baseline way of having that wind down on your worst of day, that's what your baseline. It's the smallest and simplest way we can nourish yourself and connect to your husband. How could you connect with him in the smallest and simplest way?
For me, like talking is really connecting like that with our screens away, and we can just like talk to each other, and physical touch, like those two both fill me up.
Love that. Like,
okay. Rubbing my feet while you talk to me is the dream.
Oh, yes. Oh, I just feel like we're the same person. This is what my husband has to do too when we chat. He rubs my feet. It's a win-win. So let's say ideally it's a sit down kind of on a couch and chat, maybe rub feet, taking turns doing that. Okay. Now let's decide, is that really the simplest and smallest version of that? If all the stuff is going on, okay.
No, so and even when I think ideal. Back, when I think back to like newborn days with Sage, where it was just like, oh, once Sage went to bed, like we just climbed in bed and we're like, see ya in a few hours, you know, like it was what felt most important. And in that season was just capitalizing on whatever sleep we could get.
And I think you can honor that. That's what's great about habits. It's that they're there to support you, not the other way around. You don't have to drag them around like balls and chains, right? They're there to support you. So in this phase, let's imagine it's, and I say worst of day, but I don't mean it's the worst day of your life. I'm just trying to say it's not an ideal day. Let's say you're not having one of those ideal days. What is the smallest and simplest way you can connect with Zach before you fall into bed and go to sleep?
Literally, it's like saying goodnight and kissing him and then falling in bed and going to sleep.
Okay. Now, when people hear this, they're going to say, well, that sounds like it's not a habit. I'm going to tell you it 100% is. It absolutely is. And I'm going to help you really come up with a specific way to do that. But what we want is when you are done cleaning up, the AirPods go out, then you know immediately, both of you, or you've gotten ready for bed or whatever it is, we'll figure out what that is, that you have that small moment of connection, even on your worst of days. And that's going to create the foundation you need to have the connection, period. That creates that feeling of being nurtured and connected that you needed. That small moment. And also you'll have a foundation on the worst of days or on the less than ideal days, but you'll be able to keep building. It creates momentum. Some days you're going to have that kiss and hug and like talk for 2 minutes. Hey, better than nothing. And it's going to keep building to where maybe you are just hanging out and your feet are getting rubbed and you're having meaningful conversation for 5, 10, or 20 minutes, whatever the ideal is that you're working towards because of that baseline.
I love that. I like that. It's like, yeah, what does it look like when you strip everything away, when it isn't ideal? Because I think that's where habits can get mucky, is when we build them into what's the ideal day look like, right? And like, mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but whoever lives in the ideal day. So I like this. I like stripping it down to like, what does it look like at that baseline? I also like that you acknowledge, like for some folks, it's going to feel like, oh, that's not a habit.
Yep.
But it absolutely is, because it is something to build upon. I think those are both really key. Actually, you know what? This came up for me. I was like, I think that one of the mindset shifts that I have to be really mindful of here, I feel like sometimes I'm like, oh, I should have this habit. It's like a should. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's because I'm in comparison mode. I saw it on social media. So-and-so is doing this, whatever. I should be doing that. That's supposed to be good for my mental health, or that's going to make me feel better, whatever. Without first taking stock of like, what actually would be fulfilling for me?
Yes. And that's where I actually love to start, is when I teach women about habits, I actually start with the mindset shifts. And it's not because we're going to go along with every other personal development coach out there and say, like, today's the day. You get up, you decide for yourself what you're going to do. You make a decision, you follow through with a commitment for yourself. Like, we're not going to go down that toxic positivity route of being like, your thoughts determine all of your actions. And if you don't do the actions, not only are you at fault, but also your thoughts are. We're going to go, instead of thinking, how am I framing habits in ways that are not helpful? What's my relationship with habits like? Because this is where I had to start, Alyssa. I was that stereotypical overachieving perfectionist for the first majority of my life. And then when I crashed and burned, and then I was only good at doing my responsibilities, but myself was a dumpster fire. That's what I had to figure out, is like, well, is there another way to like take care of myself outside of me thinking I have to wake up at 5 a.m. every day and do a whole series, like a whole day of regimented routines in order to be a good person and a good mom and a good teacher or whatever it is I had on my plate. And the answer for me was not only no, but it was also like, that is the way. If I totally want to be the person I want to be, connected and have the relationships I want, the way is to shift what it looks like in my mind to grow, to learn, to change. And it was so outside of perfectionism that it really stretched me in ways I never could have predicted. And it's changed my life, but it's also, this is why I'm going to say to the people who are like, well, that's not a habit for going back to those baselines. My growth has been exponential as I've adopted the mindset, it's progress, not perfection. I have grown far more the last 8 years of me working on this than I ever did as an overachieving perfectionist, and for sure far more than when I was the underachieving kind, just waiting on the sidelines, waiting for the perfect time or the energy or an identity shift, because I had changed.
I think what you're like, what's coming up for me here, what you're describing is the, for us, the self-care part of the SET method, which has gotten so buzzwordy, but for us in doing this work, isn't like an occasional thing you get to if you have time, but it is those, it's those small habits all throughout the day that we have that nourish our nervous system. Yes. And I feel like that's what you're bringing in here, is like, what are ways that we take care of ourselves all day long that are sometimes 20 seconds, sometimes 5 minutes, but also sometimes a minute, you know, like and I think a lot of them, in mindset is huge because they require boundaries usually, I feel like.
They do. And trade-offs too. Like you said, sometimes that means you sacrifice the space for yourself.
Yep. Or allowing like hard emotions to exist. For me, for instance, as a parent, like I will say, you know what, buddy, I would love to come play with you, or I'd love to come see that thing. I'm going to finish eating my breakfast and then I'll come watch. And especially when I first started saying that, like, he would melt down. I want you to come now, mama. Mama, come see it now. And like crying, he's disappointed. He would like me to drop what I'm doing to come see what he's built or created or what he's up to. He would like my attention. And that makes total sense.
Yeah.
And as I like set these boundaries for myself in different areas and created habits around, like, I'm going to sit down at the table and I'm going to eat my whole breakfast, because that allows me to show up as more of the parent that I want to be. And that it's okay if that means we're a couple minutes late for school. It's okay if that means that he is having a hard time because he wants my attention, like that all those things are okay. And I'm still going to choose me for these 3 minutes while I eat my breakfast. And then, yes, I would love to come see what you made. As I held that boundary more and took care of myself, A, I could re-enter to go see what he made and give him attention as a more regulated human. Yeah. And B, he started to learn that habit of mine. And now he'll come over and he'll say, Mama, when you're done eating, will you come see what I made?
Cute. He's learned it.
That's right. But like it took me setting that boundary and holding it. And this is where the mindset work for me has come in, of like, I'm worth taking care of.
Yes. Isn't that such a shift from like, I'm worth taking care of, and these habits are like, this moment is for me, instead of like the other way around that I think we typically are modeled or taught. It's like, you do this, good people do that, and you do it this way, and you do it this length and this time and this intensity in order for it to count.
Right. Ugh. Right. Or like, you need to have X amount of sleep. You need to have whatever. But when I say like, oh, I prioritize getting in bed by this time and staying in bed until this time, like I prioritize that because I feel best when I do that. Or I prioritize eating breakfast in the morning because I feel best versus like a healthy breakfast is a strong start to the day. And you're supposed to, when I'm doing it because it's somebody else's parameters, it's hard for me to actually set and hold the boundary versus when I do it because it's how I feel, which means it's how I can best show up for everyone in the world around me. It is easier for me to adhere to.
And the ownership feels different. And I would say like, I think we can all feel the difference in our bodies when things are really chosen because it's what we want and it's what we need. And it matches our preferences and our season right now than when we do it out of shoulds. I even think about this when I read my kids a book. Like my kids feel the difference between when I'm reading them a book out of love and I'm reading them a book because I think I should be or supposed to be. It feels different. It's the same with habits. And I'll say like, this is what has changed my life is that framework. And it's not only the mindset shift, it's also how I do things. There's so much more flexibility, which also weirdly leads to more consistency. And I've been able to release a lot in my life, but also gain so much in return. Like we have the bookmarks of our days down, both for my kids and myself. In between, there's a lot more flexibility. And also just that, like you said, the sprinkling of the self-care throughout, I show up to my kids so much better than when I'm allowing myself to do the 15-minute walk because a kid woke up early and I wanted to do 30 and I allowed myself to not to count than when I'm like insisting on everybody following through so I can get this habit. And I want to like say a swear word, dang it. You know, this is the habit. So we're going to do it or not, or we're all going to suffer, but we just end up suffering in the process of trying to complete the ideals all the time.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Right, because then we're not doing it for how are we going to feel, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. This has been like a mindset shift for me in the last few years of like, what's my actual lived experience, right? Because I can go through life with these ideas of like, oh, if I, you know, it's the shoulds. Like we should have family photos or we should do whatever. And like, so last year I was like, all right, we're going to do family pictures the first time. Like we're going to send out holiday cards. And it's the first time I've sent out holiday cards and I never again will. Where I was like,
so much work.
And it brought like my lived experience of that was zero joy. And
I get this. I get it.
So for myself, have really just started to transition into like, what's my lived experience of this? Yeah. Like if, and like sometimes, yeah, I'm not going to have a great time, but it's worth it for some sort of skill that we're building with Sage or like whatever. Like every once in a while, I'm like, all right, I'll sacrifice my lived experience because in the name of parenting or just being showing up for Zach in partnership, right? That like, yeah,
exactly.
Maybe we're going on a date and we're going record shopping, which doesn't bring me joy, does bring him joy, exactly. But being with him brings me joy, right? So like sometimes I'm going to sacrifice that, but largely what I've adopted as a mindset is like, what's my lived experience? And I think it's something that's been kind of trippy for me with habits is that when I'm stuck in the space of like, I should be doing this. And so I'm going to adopt this new habit. If I'm doing it from that lens, then it does feel really specific, right? Like your 30 minute walk, for instance, like, okay, well then I have to get in 30 minute walk. And it then doesn't leave room for the, like, actually my lived experience is that when I get out and I take a walk and I can have fresh air on my face and I can breathe, I feel better. And sometimes I might have 30 minutes to do it. And sometimes I might have 5 minutes to do it, but it's restorative for me. And I'm going to prioritize that in the morning or at this point or whatever. And so that shift that you just mentioned, I think for me has been huge. And it has started with the mindset part of what's my actual lived experience.
I love that you are grounded in that because so many women aren't. Like, this just seems totally foreign. And I'll say for the women who are afraid, like they're thinking, oh, I'm going to have to abandon all the shoulds then. Like, no, I do plenty of things I don't like to do each day, like putting the dishes away. I don't like doing that. I don't hate putting away laundry. My kids wash their own laundry, fortunately. But there's plenty of tasks throughout the day that I'm like, these are shoulds.
Yeah,
like they are. They're still shoulds. But because I'm allowed to do even these shoulds in ways that are in alignment with myself, I can do them differently. They're more shoulds can be chosen. And that is something that I think we can all adopt. Like, I can choose a should if it helps me line up to my greater priorities in ways that feel like me. And it also gives me the freedom to do them in ways that make sense for me and my family. I have a friend who her kids put away their laundry, which is great, but they don't fold them. And that's great. Like, her kids are doing their laundry, but they don't have to fold them because that matches them and their seasons right now. They just put them in the drawer. Their shirts are in the drawer and that's fine. So you can choose a should, but when you're doing it from a different framework, we're like, this should is still there to help us function and to help us show up in ways that help us feel like we're living our lives responsibly and we're connected and our relationships are being prioritized and people have socks, then we're doing it right.
Yeah. And I look at shoulds as also spots sometimes for habit stacking, like my, like, I love that downtime at the end of the day where it's just me and a podcast or an audio book or whatever. And I think prioritize that like 20 minutes of like having that like AirPods in, not hearing anybody else, not having conversations anyway. And so then I'm like, oh, I can do that while cleaning up or making lunches or whatever. And it makes those transition times like, and I think of this with kids too, that like, we know transitions are hard for a lot of kids. They're hard for most adults, like just the steps it takes to clean up at the end of the day or do the dishes. There's a lot of things that we have to do in our day to day that aren't full of fun.
Not fulfilling.
Right. But it's like, where can we bring joy into them when we can? And like, with kids, it's sometimes like, I'm going to tell you a story. And it's like, I'm making up like a big fun story, or we're going to play a game or whatever. And it's just, it's the AirPods to the cleaning up, you know, it's like, how can I take this thing that isn't super joyful for me, but that has to get done, and make it something that also is actually restorative for me?
Yeah. That's why I listen to so many audiobooks. That's how I get anything done around the house. And I want to mention one thing, because I said this earlier, like, for your specific habit to just connect with your husband each night.
Yeah.
I talked about how we want to make sure we have a way to connect that. What I meant is, I want to connect it back to an existing habit. And for you, that's your cleanup and listen to a podcast ritual. Yes. That's your already existing habit that you can attach this new habit to. You know, as soon as you are done with that, you go right to giving your husband a hug and saying goodnight. Or maybe you have to another step in between where you're getting in your pajamas and you can attach it to that. But having that kind of clarity too can help women stack in the new habit. Try to figure out, where can this new habit I want be attached to an already existing habit? And a lot of times you don't know that you already have them because they're habit. Like for me, starting a dishwasher is a big one. Yeah. Brushing your teeth is one. Using the bathroom, you can attach a new habit to that one all the time after you wash your hands or after you do drop off or clean up, or, you know, there's so many different things that you can attach to new habits to. And that can give you a little bit more hope too, as you're starting out and you're thinking, why is this habit not sticking? A lot of times it just comes down to, you don't have a specific enough pairing there to stack it to.
Yeah, that makes sense. So something that's already a part of our subconscious, like when I'm making my coffee in the morning, I don't have to think about like, okay, I take the mug out of this and then I push this button or whatever. I can just do that on autopilot because it's habitual. I do it every morning, do it at the same time. We do it in the same way. It is a part of my morning routine, is this habit of making coffee. And so being able to stack on top of a pre-existing habit that you already don't have to think about, that for me is so helpful. Otherwise, I'm just like, just kind of out there flailing, trying to figure out like, where do I put in? I think of like gratitude journal, for instance, of like, I end my day with a one a day like line journal for Sage that I write, like it's 6 years, right? So like I can see last year, what a memory from last year on this day and the year before that on this day. And it's something that brings me a lot of joy. And sometimes I'm writing like, whew, we had a doozy of a day. You're really sick, or people were over and it was loud and you were really overstimulated. Like sometimes it's not like, oh, this is the happiest memory of the day, but it's just like a memory and a marker of that day. And it is something that like, I recently stacked gratitude journal on top of that because I do Sage's journal every day before I go to bed. And so I was like, all right, I'm then right after that going to write down three things that I'm grateful for. And I already have a pen out. I'm already writing stuff down. And so it just like feels like an easy one to fit in. And it is something that takes very little time for me. Because I can write Sage's memory and less than a minute. And then I can write three things I'm grateful for at this point in less than a minute. And so I can just like kind of bang those two things out. But I had been trying to find, it's kind of since I entered into parenthood, where to stack my gratitude practice. And I just kind of like lost it as my nighttime routine as a parent changed, you know, like when I came into parenthood. And I didn't have a clear place that felt consistent to put it. And then when I was like, oh, wait, no, I'm doing this journal for Sage, I can just like throw it in after that. Like then it started to become consistent, but it kind of took that to make it consistent.
You've done the work so well on this. I think that's a huge factor for a lot of women, is they're like, I keep forgetting the habit. So we just got to get clear. Where are you going to attach it to? And then sometimes it also helps to practice that, you know, you literally practice it out of context. You pretend you're writing your journal in for Sage, and then you go to your next journal and you do that 3 or 5 times in a row, and it will help your brain implement it in real time later because you have that brain body connection, which I love hijacking.
Yeah. Well, and then it starts to feel weird if you don't do it, right? Like then routines feel off, kind of like when I'm on vacation, and like, I love that when I'm on vacation, somebody else makes the coffee, but also it just like feels different. You're like out of routine. You're out of your normal habits.
You love getting back into the routine when you get back. Isn't it weird?
Yep.
So, you know, one thing I will say too is, so I actually have a journal like that for my kids. And so only way I journal right now, the habit I actually started to get back into habit formation for myself was journaling, because I had been a really diligent journaler up until I got married. And then when I got married, I felt all that pressure to like journal our wedding day. Like the perfect memory of every single moment. And that meant I delayed it for 6 or 7 years.
Sure.
And then by then we had had like 2 kids, I think, and then probably pregnant with my third. And I was just like, not only have I not documented the wedding day, I've not documented my kids' lives. So to get back into that, I started with the baseline of, I just have to write one incomplete sentence a day.
Yep.
And that was my baseline for years. And then it built. And then, anyway, the long story short is I had journaling again, and then I got that children's journal, like similar to yours. It's called Flecks of Gold Journal is the one I have. And that is actually the only way I journal now. I was journaling for myself in addition, like I had the two stacked together, but I had my baby in January. And it was such a survival period, both leading up to his birth and long after. He's now 9 months old, that I'm like, it's okay. It's okay that I've stepped away from journaling for myself right now. This is my life experience. If we're going back to what you shared right now, my life experience is I want to journal for sure for my kids and it feels so nice, but for myself, I don't need that right now.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't feel fulfilling, right? So like when you're doing it out of obligation and not because it actually feels good. This was actually kind of on the reverse. I started doing cold showers at the end of my shower.
Yeah.
And I like really wanted it to not feel good because I hate being cold. Uh-huh. But as I was doing it, I was like, oh, actually, like I was noticing like,
it did work.
Yes, I would feel good for like 4 to 5 hours after. Just my mood was boosted. I had more energy. Incredible. And I was like, ah, shoot, I'm going to keep this one up. But it for me was like, yeah, that felt more attainable from like a mood booster, dopamine aspect. For to end my shower with 2 minutes of cold water than it did to like get in a half hour run or workout in that season of my life. And so that's where it like kickstarted, where I was like, I need a dopamine boost that's going to be accessible and that's going to have so lasting brilliant. Effects. And, but it was the opposite where I was like, please don't work. Please don't work. Please don't work. Please
I know.
Work.
I'm like, I'm kind of sad to hear that worked for you because I similarly hate being cold, but I keep hearing about the science of this and I just need to try it out. But I will say though, like I do love the result of journaling for myself. But I'm still not quite there, but I know when I'm ready, I can. And when I do, I'm going to go back to my original baseline. My baseline grew, by the way. It used to just be one incomplete line. And a few years in, it was like a paragraph a day was my baseline. That was easy. I could do that on my worst day. But right now, when I get back into it, I know I'm going to go back to my original baseline. And that, is okay. So they're for your seasons. That's okay. You can do them differently too.
Yeah, I love that. And for me, like, first trimester, I was like, I just like so didn't feel in my body in the same way that I was like, I'm just gonna cold shower for 15 seconds, like at the end, you know, like I went down, at that point was up to like 2.5 minutes before going into the first trimester and went back down to like 15 seconds. And then when I felt better in my body and I was like, okay, I feel like because it's a mental game every single time I do it, like, that I just didn't have the mental capacity. I found myself being like, I don't want to do it. I'm just going to avoid it. And I was like, just do 15 seconds because I know that my lived experience after it feels really good. Then I went back to 15 seconds and I was like, I can do anything for 15 seconds. And I saw some effects and I was like, okay. And then as I got out and started, moved into my second trimester and felt better, got back up to doing it for a couple of minutes and was like, okay, great. Like, but allowing that ebb and flow is huge and so hard for those of us who I have been an overachiever my whole life. And being able to say like, I won't get an A+, right? Like, or that the bar for A+ moves. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. Like, this is what it is. This is how you get an A+. And so that is like a mindset shift piece for me. Where would you recommend that like busy parents start?
So I'm a habit person now. I can confidently say that. But based off of these mindset shifts that we've talked about, as well as the practice of doing things differently. But one of the things I think might be fascinating for people to know is like, even me as like a working mom of 5 kids, my day is not 100% regimented. I don't have good habits that are completely like maxed out all day, every day. I focus primarily on the bookends because those are the most controllable, sometimes not depending on the season, for me. So the mornings or the evenings. And you know, it's so funny that that's where we kind of use your example. I'd actually recommend people start with the evening. Don't worry about all day, everyday stuff. Don't even start with the mornings yet until you have a good way to wind down at night, a way that helps you feel the ways and the feelings that you want to feel, whether that's restored or connected or calm, or maybe your feeling is even you feeling more alive, like yourself. Maybe some people love to learn at night. I don't know.
Sure.
Focus on the nighttime for yourself. That's going to give back so much more starting the next morning.
Love it. And I love that idea of like, what do you want to feel? Monica, thank you for this. And thank you for doing this work. Where can people learn more about you, follow you, all that jazz?
I have loved this conversation. And I also adore you and your work so much. Thank you. Pre-ordered your book as soon as it was available. And I loved having you on my podcast as well. So that's actually where they can find me primarily. Go scoot over on your search on whatever podcast app you're looking for and search for About Progress. I've been doing this for almost 7 years. And it's, like I said, changed my life, but all by accident. And I would love for them to join in the experiment of, you know, trying progress outside of perfectionism. And I do actually have a course called the Sticky Habit Method. It's designed for real women who want habits that are supportive of their lives. And they can find that at aboutprogress.com/stickyhabitmethod.
Great. Perfect. Thank you so, so much, Monica.
Oh, it was an honor for me. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sow, S-E-W. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sow to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.